If you cook your food versus buy your food, you lose weight.
If you go back to prehistoric times, go out and hunt the food, you would sit around the fire. Community was strengthened and built.
We were raised to only get this certain amount of food. We only got the parts. We only got the organs of animals. Your body needs more than what you've been getting. I'm too busy to do this. I don't have enough time. That doesn't make any sense. Do you want to see your child grow up or do you want to see your child sick?
I am honored and privileged to have Miss Christina Casado, founder of Brunch at Zion's, mom, and difference maker.
My job is to give you something that you never think that you would eat and make it good.
So you're also a two-time cancer survivor, survivor of abuse.
I'm doing something that I'm not supposed to do because of the abuse, because of the cancer, because of the food injustice. You're not supposed to be where you are. You're not supposed to have the heart that you have, but you do.
Welcome to the Real Mentors Podcast. I am your host, Sean Martin, and today I am honored and privileged to have our guest with us, Ms. Christina Casado, founder of Brunch at Zion's, more importantly, mom and difference maker. I'm going to hand the floor over to Christina, who's going to tell you a little bit more about Brunch with Zion, but also about her other program, Dine with Dignity. So on the Real Mentors Podcast, which as you know stands for Real Life Examples Altering Lives, it's our goal to shine a light on members of the community who have committed part or all of their life to making a difference in the lives of others for the better. And you came across my path and I was instantly moved by your story and thought we should have you on as a guest because you are on the ground, so to speak. You are in the trenches and you are doing something to make a difference in the lives of others. So please tell our audience what that is, what Brunch at Zion is, what Dining with Dignity is.
Okay, so Brunch at Zion's is my company. I'm a personal chef and a caterer. We also had a restaurant, but we're relocating to be announced in the future where we'll be at.
Stay tuned.
Stay tuned. The company was based and named after my son, Zion. It was very important to me that when I became a mother, I wanted to start thinking right away about generational wealth and what that looks like and building something for him that he could be proud of or at least have. And then when he no longer wants it, even if he wants to sell it and become something different, it was his right to do so. I think because being, you know, in the black and brown community, you don't see that very often. You don't see the actual wealth being passed on, or even we see wealth of like talents, right, passed on, but you never see the financial sector of it. So for me, it was very important that I started that for my son. And then it grew, right? We base our company around the arts and people and the creatives and also other nonprofits, because to me, that's important that we understand that as a black company, that we buy black, we sell, I mean, everything we deal with, from our butcher to the farms to anything that I'm wearing, my doctor, that I can identify with who is helping me, with who I'm buying from, because we're recycling that black dollar and that brown dollar, and we're actually making us stronger in our communities. And I think that that was what I wanted to do, and that's what I had in mind when I opened the company. And then now my son is actually cooking with me. He started making the cookies. I wanted to teach him the hard part first, and cookies are not hard, but baking is hard. Okay. Cooking is easier than baking, because if you mess one thing up in baking, it messes everything up.
It's so, like a chemistry.
Yeah, it is. Absolutely. So for me to see him do it and learn it and get it, I'm like, oh, he's going to be an amazing chef. And usually, I hate to say it, ladies, don't get mad at me, but men are usually better chefs than women.
She said it, not me.
When they understand and love it. Because my dad, he was an amazing chef. And
why do you think that is? Just curious.
I don't know. Right. I really don't. I never thought about it, but I know that when I've sat down and eaten someone's food who is a male and he really loves what he does, I don't know if it's a logical thing more than an emotional thing. I think women, we tend to connect emotion to what we do. Like everything I do is out of love. Like when I'm cooking, I'm like, waiting to see, like, do you like it? You know, are you? I'm still always around the corner, like, and then people are like, and I'm like, okay, I don't know why, but men, they just do it, and there's no thought about it, and it's almost like, dang, you know, all the little and this and that, and I'm like, oh, okay, you know, like, I wish sometimes I saw that confidence in the women, especially when it comes to chef, because it is a male ran industry. So sometimes when I'm in there and I win a competition or I get the, oh my God, your meal was the best, I'm like, really? Why? You know, but maybe it's because what I bring, the essence of what I bring. But most of the time when you watch shows and stuff, I don't know if it's because men have really an I don't give a attitude. And okay. Women, we're overthinkers, and we think a lot about, is this going to be perfect? We want it to be perfect. And I think if we just kept it simple, we could probably be better cooks. Right. I mean, I keep it simple.
I've never heard it put that way, and I do agree with you. I think as a guy who was raised by a single mom who cooked pretty much every day, mm-hmm. Food was delicious, and nothing speaks home like a mother's cooking.
Yeah.
But restaurants, whether you see them on TV mm-hmm. or whether you go to a restaurant or you've been privileged enough to sit and dine in some of the fine yeah. restaurants in New York City and around the world, they're usually male-run kitchens. Mm-hmm. And there's a big show that's popular right now, The Bear, mm-hmm. which I got into and I was just fascinated.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think so many people are, because it's like the most streamed show. And that's a kitchen run by a man. Yeah. And again, I don't know that that's the rhyme or the reason to it, but I do appreciate your candor and your take on it. And, mm-hmm. you know, listen, if anybody out there is offended, get over yourself.
Don't be, because see, what I'm doing is I got trained by a man, so that makes me even a double threat. Then I'm training a man, so now we're making him extra special. So don't worry.
Listen,
we all have parts in this. We created that man who's a good chef, so don't get offended.
Christina
by it.
Bought us some brunch and some dessert prior to this recording, and I just want to say thank you.
You're
it
welcome.
Was delicious.
You're welcome.
And it came in a bag, so I can't even imagine if I got it fresh off the stove. But thank you. That hit the spot. Been a long day, and I was such a pleasant surprise. You've been a pleasant surprise.
Yeah.
When we first got on the phone to get to know each other a little better and get to know about your mission and your, you know, the way that you serve your community and your people, I was blown away, because for me, and I'll use the cooking analogy, when you're creating a recipe from scratch, that you may have a base for it, but mm-hmm. it kind of evolves, and you put your own flavor on
yeah.
it. And in doing this podcast, it's an evolving mission for me.
Yeah.
And initially it was this thing, and then it was that thing. And then I get to speak to you, and I'm like, all right, it's clicking for me now. And you overheard me speaking to Violeta, and it was the same thing. It was, how can I shine light on people of color that are doing mentorship and dedicating their life to making life better for others in the community?
Yeah.
And it just lined up perfectly. Who is your community, and who do you service with your mission?
I serve anybody. I serve anybody who is suffering with food injustice. So I want to say this in the best way possible. It doesn't matter what income bracket you're in, because the Dine with Dignity program focuses on everybody. Right now, I've just added a new sector to that Dine with Dignity program that allows people who are on HRA to, I come in and I cook for them for free. They buy their food and I cook for them for free. So I give them my time so that, and also I tell them, I give them suggestions on what they should buy so that we can create these meals. I cook for them for 2 weeks at a time in one shot. I make sure that they pack everything so that they are able to just heat it up or put it in their oven. We are not using microwaves, we're using ovens.
Okay.
So this is important that they actually understand what this looks like. And then this is kind of me teaching them so that I can step away, right? Because after a while, you have a personal trainer, right? But you should understand what the personal trainer, the tools that the personal trainer is giving you so that you can start working out on your own. So that's basically what I do in that sector. Middle class is what I focus on, because sometimes people go through hardships. Okay. And I want to make sure that they don't have to struggle and think like, do I pay my bills? Do I eat?
Right.
So the local farms have partnered with me, and we get things at, especially for those families, we get things at a really amazing price so that I can go in and expose them to foods that are good for you
right.
while they're going through hardships. So that one thing they don't have to worry about is their health, right?
Right.
because sometimes they are going through health issues and that's right. the problem. So I want to make sure that they aren't. Right. And then there's the fun side of things, right? Like there's the art galleries and there's the private parties and those all of those types of things. So I don't really have a specific clientele. I think that's what makes my job not boring, is that I get to do so many things because I get to do the give back, right? But then I get to do the profit side of things. Right. And I get to see all these amazing people. And I don't really name drop, but I get to meet some of the most amazing people. And I'm so proud to see them eat my food right. and enjoy it. And then a lot of the time Zion's with me. So he gets to like, he doesn't even know who he's meeting right now. And I think like this is so beautiful because in the future he's going to say, my mom was kind of a real kick-ass.
Big deal, yeah.
Like, and to me, it's like it's a moment of him watching how I serve, because it doesn't matter at what income bracket people are, but it's a servitude. When you cook for someone, it's like out of love,
right?
You know, and I use that with no matter who I'm working with. Mm. So for right. me, that's what the company is about. That's who I serve. I serve people. I serve our people.
Right. You talk about cooking with love, yeah. and if you go back, you know, to prehistoric times, yeah. food was what brought the yeah. tribe together,
yeah.
right? You would go out and hunt the food yeah. or, you know, gather yeah. the food, and, yeah. and you would sit around the fire, and that's where community was strengthened mm-hmm. and built, and I think a lot of your mission is tied into that.
Yeah.
You know, we've gotten away from that in terms of this hustle and bustle lifestyle and being in, you know, traffic more time yeah. than ever, and people just grab the nearest option. So yeah. as a whole in this country, we've seen the health deteriorate, mm-hmm. despite the fact that people are living longer.
Yeah.
They're not living healthier
yeah.
longer. They're just alive longer
yeah.
because of medicines that are keeping them that way. Mm-hmm. There's also the component of poverty and mm-hmm. of color that plays into the choices that yeah. are available and the ignorance around food. Growing up in the projects, you go to the bodega, which is the corner store for my listeners who don't understand. Mm-hmm. You would go to the corner store, and the first thing you see is all the treats, the cupcakes and yep. the cookies and the crap. And then the entire counter is surrounded with more candy and crap and
yep.
Twix bars and you name it. Yep. And that's our option. Anytime that I'm working in Brooklyn or the Bronx or Queens, and I'm in a neighborhood that is, you know, like the one I grew up in, it's so hard to say, I want to go get some grilled chicken and rice or a healthy option. It's yeah. not even available
yeah.
in the majority of places. So another component that really fascinated me was you talked about teaching 120 students, I
yeah.
think it was,
yeah.
how to cook. What yeah. does that look like? How did you get there? And what exactly is that?
Oh,
how do you do
gosh.
That?
Oh my gosh. So a special friend of mine named Dr. V, she actually told me about a school that has different success programs for kids. So it shows them different jobs, different careers in life. And they asked if she knew a chef. And she asked me, and I was like, absolutely, I would do it. So it's four segments. So there's about 30 kids in each class. And it has to be interactive. So for me, I think we need to really, she gave me feedback and she was like, kids don't really like healthy. Don't talk to them about healthy. And I'm like, and we're in the middle of this conversation and I'm like, cause she's an amazing speaker and an amazing leader in what she does. And it was one of the moments that I didn't take the feedback and on purpose. You can't receive everything that people say to you because they're not in what you're doing all
right.
the time. And coming from a household that was very scarce with food, and I would go to other people's homes and eat, and seeing what their moms would cook, celery with like cheese or peanut butter on it, and I loved it, and I didn't even know I liked that kind of
right.
stuff at that age. It's very important that we hit the youth so that we can stop them from getting food-related illnesses, that we stop them from obesity. Giving them and having them taste something, but creating it in a way that they look at it and they're enticed by what's in front of them. Kids are very visual, so it's very important that you just tell them, try it. You know, me and my son, we go back and forth a lot. He's like, no, I see green, I see black
familiar.
Stuff. And I'm like, okay, but just lick it, try it. And then he'll be like, mommy, that's good. And I'm like, you have to try it.
Right.
You cannot just say you don't like it if you've never tried it. But as a parent, that's our job. Like, that's our job to do. So as a chef, that's my job, right? My job is to give you something that you would never think that you would eat and make it good. Like, that's my job. That's my purpose. So that's what I do. I'll use an example. We deal with a lot of golden beets. People always tell me, I hate beets. Don't put beets on my thing. Half of the time I put beets in their salad and they're like, what are these, peaches, mangoes? And I'm like, no, those are golden beets. And people are like, these are good. I didn't even know I liked beets. And it's like, because you were too afraid to try. Right. We are thinking in the mindset of how we were conditioned.
Right.
Back in the day, we were raised to only get this certain amount of food. We only got the parts. We only got the organs of animals.
Right.
So we made magic out of them. But now that we have access to everything, we need to understand that your body needs more than what you've been getting. That's right. Why you have a food-related illness. If you pay attention to giving your body what it needs, you're not going to have to be on vitamins. You're not going to have to do the things that you're doing, and you're actually hurting your body, because your body is taking vitamins, but it doesn't absorb half of the right. stuff that it takes in anyway. So using the honeys and showing people how to actually absorb nutrients
right.
Is really what I do. Like, it's important to me that when I cook for them, that I'm talking to them about what I'm doing right. so that they understand the purpose in it. I'm very purposeful when I cook for people.
Yeah, and Whole Foods, I think, is the trick. Just not the brand, just yes. Whole Foods.
Yeah.
And there's a general rule of thumb with nutrition, and it boils down to, if it wasn't around 2,000 years ago, it's probably not healthy for you.
Yeah.
And you can apply that to pretty much everything.
Yeah.
Impossible Burger people,
yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
If it wasn't around 2,000 years ago, it's not good for you. The ingredients that were are good for you, but the preservatives and the things that they add to yeah. our foods here in the yeah. United States, it's almost criminal.
Mm-hmm.
I'll go to a third world country like yeah. Mexico or Costa Rica, and while they have a ton of junk food, don't get
yeah.
me wrong, there's limitations on the yeah. things that they can put in the foods that
yeah.
we are wholly allowed to put in foods.
Yeah.
It's a little known fact, at least in our community, that the reason that high fructose corn syrup is so readily available in all the food we eat, it's because America grows this huge supply of corn.
Mm-hmm.
So we need something to do with it. So let's yeah. create a sugar out of corn.
Yeah.
That shit is terrible for
yeah,
us.
Absolutely.
Terrible. If you go to, you know, the glass bottle of Coke, Mexican Coke, is affectionately nickname it, there's real cane sugar in there. It tastes better.
Yeah.
And even though sugar's not great, it's better for you than yeah. high fructose corn
yeah.
syrup.
Yeah.
And that's just one example.
Yeah.
Breakfast cereals.
Yeah.
It's terrible. And I struggle with that myself. Mm-hmm. As a father of two young children, we want to allow them to have cookies and ice cream and all the things that we enjoyed as kids. We don't want to rob them of it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we are knowledgeable and know enough and know better now that we make wiser decisions. And
yeah.
we're setting them down a better path, hopefully. You know, with that said, what are some of the things that parents can do, in your opinion, to improve the mm-hmm. food quality that they're using when they decide to cook in their home?
I would say definitely choose, depending on where you live, choose seasonal vegetables, because your body needs different things during certain times of the year. And if you're using what your body needs during the winter, you're going to be a healthier human being. So I would say partner with the local farms. Go to NYC Farms, and you'll see what farms and what farmers markets are happening. I think it's important for families to cook together. I think it's important, if you are going to give your kids cookies, make your cookies.
Okay.
So that the child can see what's going in it. Because if they don't like eggs, right, and they see the eggs going, they're going to be like, ew, I don't want that. So that could be a good thing or a bad thing, right?
Right.
Or they could be more intrigued and be like, well, I think a cookie should have sprinkles in it, right? And then you let them do that. And then you're feeding their creativity. But it's a known fact that if you cook your food versus buy your food, you lose weight.
Yeah.
So it's so important. And I know that kitchens are hot here because of the summer. And people don't, like, during the summer, I hear people, I don't cook during the summer. But there are salads. There are soups you can make. There are things that you could put in a crock pot and have cooked throughout the day, so that, like, especially like nice pulled chicken with like cilantro and some Parmesan or something that makes a really juicy chicken, where you're not sitting there in a hot kitchen all day cooking, right? And these are things that the kids can do, and you can do them together. And I think that we need to get back to that moment where we are involved in what our children eat. Sodas, right? They go to these corner stores, they're drinking sodas all day. How much water did you drink? You know, like, it's important that we as parents, I this is where I challenge all the parents to stand up and stop saying, I'm too busy to do this. I don't have enough time. You have 24 hours.
Just like anybody else.
Yep. And to me, that doesn't make any sense. Do you want to see your child grow up, or do you want to see your child sick? And this is that moment where, as a parent, you owe it to you and yourself and your child to lead by example and be there with them. So what I do is I do these charcuterie boards for Zion, and I'll say, okay, what do you want me to cut up? He'll put cherries, he'll put strawberries, he'll put pineapple, he'll add cookies, he'll add pretzels. I just let him create a board, and what I do is I place it there, so while I'm working during the day, he's still eating, but he's eating good things.
Right.
But it's a mix of it. He does turkey bacon on there. Sometimes he'll do a croissant. Sometimes he'll do broccoli because he likes broccoli. So depending on what he's eating, he's still eating good things, because now I get to see it, but it's there for him. And I don't have to say, he doesn't have to say, Mommy, can you make me? Nope, he's got it there. And then during dinner, we eat dinner. And he's like, I want noodles. And I'll help him make the noodles. He's still learning, but because I get nervous as a parent, just because things get hot, and he's 4. So, and when we're taking the water and we're straining it, I'm like, eee.
Yeah, 4 is young. Yeah, yeah. My daughter's 7. Yeah. She cooks her own eggs, and we're there watching, but we have an electric stove also.
And I do too. Yeah. I do too, but it's still, he's still 4. And you know, the last thing you want is your kid to get burned or anything. So, but I think it's interesting that he's excited about it, and he gets it. And then I remember his dad calling me up one day and being like, yo, what is he talking about? He said he wants oodles. I'm like, noodles? And he's like, okay, where do I get them from? I'm like, no, we cook them. He's like, oh, no.
You're making this hard for me.
I'm like, it's so easy. So I'm like, so now I send them, because I'm just like, dude, they're so easy.
It's obvious dad's cooking's not holding its weight against yours. That's for sure.
No. This is not a man who loves to cook. So let's just be clear about that.
As a man who doesn't love to cook, I'll do the healthy thing on the grilled chicken, white rice, broccoli. It's pretty much it. I'll throw some salmon, some steak. But it's pretty much the same thing. But, you know, eating healthy in the clean sense that I do is boring. It doesn't have to be, though.
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't have to
be. Especially when you pick your own vegetables. I don't think people understand. Well, for me, I'm sorry. I might just be different in that way. Like, sometimes the farm would come into the restaurant and be like, we have a bunch of sunchokes. Do you want them? And I used to love when they would come in, and I'd be like, hold on. And I'd wash it off, and I'd be like, I'd go grab one of my sauces, and I'd put it on it. And I'm like, wait, what family is this from? You know, because I've never heard of a sunchoke, but I want to taste it to see if it's
vegetable snob.
I've never heard of a sunchoke, but they're amazing. They're like a mix between an apple, a radish, and a beet. They're so good. They're sweet, but they're hearty. So I put our green sauce on it, and I was like, actually, these will be good raw. And she was like, let me try that. So I'm giving it to her. She's like, Christina, how do you do this? And I'm like, I don't know. It's just, I love it so much that for me, it's like a fashion designer, right? When they love something so much, they can just create a design, and you're like, how did you make that? How did you do that? And it's like, it's just what they love to do. So for me, food is what it is. And I never knew that food was that for me until the pandemic, when I had Zion, where I always cooked for people. I mean, I would lead like panel-based dinners, and we'd have conversations. And I just thought it was like a moment to get people together. But I didn't realize how much thought I put behind it and how much love I had for food until I had to start making my son's baby food. And I was thinking, like, what am I going to make him tomorrow? Maybe he's going to try this. And then I was like, oh, my God, I'm thinking about this all the time. And my friend said, what? You'll know your purpose when you wake up thinking about it every day. Mm. And this is the thing that is in your day every day, because some people don't know what their purpose is. Because I was like, I don't know what my purpose is. I think I'm a good person. And then it hit me. I think about this every day, and I think about it like I obsess over it.
Let's segue to, I know a little bit about your backstory and the audience maybe doesn't. So you're also a two-time cancer survivor.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're also a survivor of abuse.
Yes.
And you have found the strength to move forward. And leading up to this interview, we spoke off camera and I was amazed and I called you a glass half full kind of person because you just have this positive outlook. You mentioned something beautiful, which is if you wake up every day with it on your mind, that's probably your purpose.
Yeah.
How far back does this purpose go? And then we'll lead into the shit you've been through to actually find the strength to step into your purpose and make it your mission, because I think that'll be useful to a lot of the audience.
So I think my purpose started very young, and I didn't realize that. I always knew I was going to be an artist. I always knew I was going to be a fashion designer. In my mind, that was what I was going to do. Everybody always agreed, so it felt comfortable. And during all this time and all these conversations, I'm cooking for people, but people are like, girl, you need to open a restaurant. I'm like, no, thank you. I remember one time I was in church and the pastor said, Christina, stand up. And I'm like, you're not about to embarrass me in front of the whole congregation. He's like, your hands can do so many things. You are so talented, but you're afraid to just, you have to do everything. You can't just say, I want to do this. You have to do it all. And I'm like, I don't even know what that means, and that's too vague. And here it is, someone else telling me what I should be doing and that I'm good at this and I'm good at that. And it's easy to agree, but it's like you still feel empty, right? Like there was always this calling in me that I just couldn't place what it was. But when I had my son, it was like that moment where I was like, I'm going to actually cook baby food for my son. And I know for some people, they do that naturally and that's that. No, but actually good food.
Right.
Not like some mush in a thing. Like I was making him salmon and I wasn't pureeing it because I felt like that was disgusting. So I was actually making him food and he was eating it. And the doctor's like, don't give him this and don't give him
that.
This
is before 6 months, I'm guessing.
That's what they said.
Right.
But I was still doing it.
Right.
And I remember my grandmother giving me a lot of honey, and her nickname for me.
I guess there wasn't baby food in prehistoric times, huh?
I guess not, you know, I don't know. But my grandmother used to call me a little bee because she says, you can do the impossible. You are one of those people that you're not supposed to be where you are. You're not supposed to have the heart that you have, but you do. And that is an impossible, beautiful mission that you have. So you're like a bee. Bees aren't supposed to fly with those little wings and those big bodies. And I like my big body. So here it is. I'm doing something that I'm not supposed to do, right? Because of the abuse, because of the cancer, because of the food injustice that I went through. But I'm doing it because it's something I'm supposed to be doing. And I didn't realize that I was supposed to be doing this. I really thought I was supposed to be in the arts. And everything that I was struggling with that in that area, I didn't understand it was moving me to this. So now, like when I create plates or I create food, I try to make it the most beautiful because to me it's still art, but in such a different form. And I love when I see people, oh my God, this is beautiful. I'm like, my heart is so happy. I'm like, yes.
But it's an affirmation.
Yeah, yeah.
For overcoming the doubt that you still have within yourself.
Yeah.
Because the only thing that moves us forward are wins.
Yeah.
And for so long, based on the story you told me, you saw a lot of losses.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow you managed to be positive
yeah.
and have that huge heart. And it's been calling you and it's calling you. And the pastor called you. And you've heard people over the years tell you that you had these gifts and you should lean into them. But you didn't believe it yourself. And
because I didn't think it was a powerful mess. Like I knew it was meant for something big, but I didn't realize the power in it.
What was the quote that you, or what was the statement you made when you first came in the room about purpose?
You have to keep your eye on the purpose and not the people, because if you keep your eye on the people, it will never be enough.
Right.
You're not doing what people, you know, people want to confine you and make you this kind of chef, or you should be doing this, or when you're teaching a class, it should be about this. And it's like, you have to keep your eye on the purpose, because the purpose is to feed people, to create something that invokes health. And that's what you have to keep your eye on. So it's like a do good recklessly type thing. And you have to just continue to do that and not focus on anything else. Right. Even when somebody says, okay, that's your I've got a lot of oh my gods over here. So let me just focus on what I do well and keep feeding that. Right. Like, it's almost like doing things for likes. Right. If I focused on the likes, I would be so depressed. Right. God knows I'd be depressed. Right. So I don't focus on those things. I really focus on making sure that I'm still putting my product out there, but I'm still also doing a good job. So every job I get, I treat it like a celebrity. I treat it like this person is going to call again. This person, I have to show out every single time I get in someone's kitchen. I don't care at what level you are in your life.
Right.
Yeah. So for me, it's that. It's like a performance.
Right. And it is art. Mm-hmm. And art on the highest level, but also with the most love, because I mean, what kind of art other than food will actually sustain somebody physically?
Yeah.
You can nurture the soul, you can nurture your creative juices, you can nurture your brain and your heart through art and all the mediums that we're familiar with art and what we associate art with. But cooking is an art as well. Yeah. And I think you've tapped into that in a beautiful way, and you articulated in a way that most people, including myself, have not been privy or privileged enough to hear. And bringing it back, I think the conversation around food, and particularly in communities of color and affected communities that are at risk, is an ignorance around the importance of nutrition and food. I mean, I'm Puerto Rican and Dominican by my family lineage. I was born here. But we grew up, and I've had friends die of heart attacks before they turn 40.
Yeah.
And it's because the kinds of food they were eating and what they were putting in their body out of sheer ignorance.
Yeah.
And that didn't have to happen. And these were people that loved cooking, ironically enough, but didn't have the intrinsic knowledge of exactly how important the ingredients they were putting in their food and then putting in their bodies was.
Yeah.
Because corn oils and vegetable oils and all the things we grew up on as Latinos and Caribbean lineage, it's not good for you.
And oil, what people don't understand about oil is it is exactly that. It clogs everything.
Right.
You know, when you're eating it like that, that's what's happening. So you need to find first the most valuable oil, right, for your system. Like, it would probably be a vegetable oil because it can go to high temperatures and not become toxic. Coconut oil is great, but it's great in raw form. Olive oil is great, but great in raw form. There are certain oils that shouldn't be heated to a certain temperature because then they become toxic. And I think that is the moment. Those are the conversations that we need to have with our children when we're cooking. Little simple things that can change your whole life. People think there's a difference between brown sugar and white sugar.
Enlighten us.
It's called molasses. Brown sugar to me is not any different than white sugar. White sugar is just broken down a little bit more. I would tell people, if you're going to do something, don't do any sugar.
Right.
It is what it is. If you're going to sweeten, try to sweeten by what we have available to us. Honeys are great. Honeys are amazing in coffee. You have no idea, like, half of these milks, like all those lactates and things like that, they already have sugars in them. You can taste them. Right. You can drink a cup of lactate milk and taste the sweetness. So if you're paying attention, you'll know that you don't need all this stuff. And then it's very addictive. So that's why companies put it in there. That's why companies deal with it the way that they do. But we like to locally source our things. So like our butchers and the farms and the honeys that we use, so that I understand where it's coming from, what's going in it. So I can speak to it when people are asking me. I'm doing a catering, and they asked me, oh, you're halal. Can I see your halal certification? I said, no, I am not halal. I deal with a halal butcher.
Right.
So therefore, I will send you his information and you can get that from him. I'm like, honey, like, well, I don't even know. Like, I don't know where you got that from. I don't have livestock in my back. You know, right, like, where am I going to put it in my bathroom? Like, so I was like, no. But it's important. I'm very intentional about the people that I deal with to gather the food to cook for my clients. So
I think intentional is an amazing word. And I think when it comes to food, people are not intentional in terms of the choices they make, unless they're cooking. If they're taking the time to cook, you're physically putting in ingredients to create a dish. But what poor people are up against is the cost of eating healthy. And you did mention, you know, farm fresh or locally sourced. And is it fair to say that's not necessarily available to a good amount of people, both in terms of proximity and availability and also financially them being able to afford it? Because I just came from a farmer's market in my neighborhood in Long Island, and it was far more expensive than what I would get at the supermarket, although it was far better.
Really?
Yes.
Well, no, that's not true. Okay. It's actually cheaper.
Okay.
And if you ever want to go to a farmer's market, it's on 161st and the Grand Concourse every Tuesday from 8 to 3. And their stuff is really cheap and so good and organic and locally sourced. I spend so much less money when the farmer's market's open. Yeah, because you can get more. And you're getting things that are actually good for you, right? So you're paying for something that you don't know how long it's been in the supermarket. You don't know what condition it is when you peel things back. And I'm getting tired of that. So at least this, you know, it's coming off of the farm. You can actually look at it. I'm not sure in Long Island how it works.
Well, so I don't probably live in a place where they're going to charge you a premium for anything.
Yeah.
Full disclosure.
I was,
But 161st in the concourse, your food box over Yankee Stadium in the South Bronx, you're probably going to get fair market value for that product.
And the good thing about some of these farmers markets is that they're getting smart. They're allowing people to use their food stamps at these farmers markets.
That's a game changer.
Yes, absolutely. And certain restaurants are allowed to use food stamps based on certain, if you have a staple like bread in your restaurant, people can use food stamps. But it has to be the specific staple that HRA asks for.
Right.
So it's very important, and I would say this to all restaurants, look into that, because if you can feed more people, you have less waste, you have less things that you have to throw away, you actually can feed more people on a bigger scale and make some money.
Right.
I think it's a win-win for our community when we are open to that, but I also think there's a prejudice involved in a specific type of people. They don't want a specific type of people coming in their restaurant. And that's when I say, you know, that's just, you know, it's
the
sad.
Ignorance of the world. And we talked about that off camera. And that's a loaded conversation.
Yeah.
I could see you don't want to go down. I don't want to go down.
Not right now.
Because, you know, at the end of the day, the world is the way that it is. Mm-hmm. It's unfair. But it's on us to realize that it is. And we're going to move forward anyway.
Yeah.
And, you know, me being someone who came up hard, and there were times when we were on food stamps or WIC. It's funny when you said that about the restaurants being able to accept that EBT card or the food stamps accepting it. Because I go back to the paper food stamp days where, you know, Poppy at the bodega, you could still get a six pack or whatever it was using food stamps. All right.
Yeah.
I'm not telling on anybody, but it happens. And when you went to use the WIC, it had to be like Kixery or something that met the government's regulations for a healthier food choice.
Yeah.
If only we could, you know, I guess expand that idea
yeah.
to the entire food source that we put out there. But, you know, what a lot of people don't realize when it comes to the product that's put out on the shelf is that a lot of the governing bodies of the foods that we eat are actually financed and set up by the same companies that are creating the food. So it's in their best interest to plead ignorance or get that FDA stamp or whatever food administration stamp on the box because it's passed certain regulations. But in truth, it's unhealthy for you and they know it. And the manufacturers of that food and the CEO of that company is probably not eating their own product. So that's an unfortunate part of, you know, capitalism, where we're stepping over people to make a profit.
Yeah.
And then that feeds into the health system, which also takes full advantage of that on every level. We want you sick. We don't want you cured. We want you dependent on medicine, and hence why people do live longer. But the quality of life isn't that. So
Can I just add sure. one thing? So certain farms, what they like to do is they like to have a market day where they actually sell their vegetables. And then they have a day where they actually give the community a free bag. Most farms do that. The two in the Bronx do that. La Finca does that, and so does Roots Farm. Roots Farm, I think it's the Friday. It's the pickup from 10 to 1.
And where's that located?
So that's off of 153rd and the Grand Concourse.
Okay.
And they give to the community. And if you're part of an organization or you're picking up for, like, say you have an elderly group that can't make it, they'll save bags for you. And these are things that have no pesticides, organic, from the farm.
Where are they grown?
In their beds. Farm. Yeah.
So they're growing it indoor?
No, it's outdoor.
Outdoor. So here in the Bronx as well?
Yeah. So the thing about the Bronx is the soil, like, you can't grow straight into the ground.
Okay.
Because there's a lot of toxicity in the ground.
Of course.
So they create these beds, they make sure they're lined properly, and then they grow their vegetables on that. So
gotcha.
And so does La Finca. La Finca is a brown and black owned farm, and they are such beautiful people. It's a farm ran by artists.
Oh.
So they do all these murals around the Bronx. It's such a beautiful little journey to their little garden. And the people who run it are so special. Like, I don't even know how we found each other, but I'm just so happy we did. And I don't even care. I'm like, thank you, God.
Right.
But they have really taught me a lot about how food and art coincide together. Yeah.
And you've taken that message and you ran with it. That's
yeah,
pretty cool.
Yeah.
And that brings me to, as far as the growth process, you hit something that I never thought of before, but your body is in tune with nature.
Mm-hmm.
Us as human beings were originally one with this natural environment. And then, you know, we threw insults instead of stones, and then we built buildings instead of huts, and we grew into society and civilization as we know it. But God, the universe, Mother Earth provides exactly what we need.
Yeah.
It's usually us and this that have created ways to get away from that.
Yeah.
So you said something in terms of the foods that grow at certain times of the year are what our bodies are meant to take in at those times of the year. And I've never thought of it that way.
So think, during the winter, you're cold. Your body builds more fat, right? So how do you think your body needs to break down that fat or build that fat that you need during the winter to survive? It's through the foods you eat. So if you notice you change the way you eat during the winter, right? Don't you eat heavier foods?
Yeah.
And during the summer you eat lighter foods?
Yeah.
So think about what is actually growing. Those are the things that you need to focus on. But some people can, I mean, unless you live in Miami like I did, those are the only people I know will be out in the hot sun drinking a hot coffee. And I'm like, Lord,
I'm guilty.
And I'm still that person. I know. I'm like, who am I? But it happens. Like, when you have seasons like this, and moving to New York from a place like Miami, I realize that my body does different things and it needs different things. Even my hair, my skin, it's so different here. So I started to just go with the flow on it. And cancer has really woken me up to that. You know, like, the doctor is like, you know, everything in your levels is great. He's like, and your family, you have diabetes and I was like, yep. He's like, I don't see any of that. He's like, I'm so proud of you. But the thing is, like, this cancer, it just came back. But we found it in stage one. I went through chemo. I didn't have to do radiation this time. And I was able to come out of it. It did do a little damage to my lungs, but I've been going to therapy, physical therapy for it.
What kind of cancer?
It's a rare form of stomach cancer.
Okay.
So the first time they had to cut twice to take it out. So it was a lot. But this time around, it was just, I had to do chemo. And I'm not going to say it wasn't as bad. I think it was worse this time.
Because how long ago was this, the second?
The second one was, I got diagnosed in late October of last year.
Of last year.
Mm-hmm.
So you're still in amazing spirits.
Yeah. No, well, one... I just finished chemo probably, I want to say 2 months now.
What?
Yeah.
Would never, I just learned that. Would never know that.
Yeah. I was like, it's been longer than 2 months, right? Yeah. 3 months? Yeah.
Going off topic. How do you stay so positive?
My son, this guy looks at me like a magic. And I know that if I show him that I give up, he's going to give up. And I don't want him to give up on life. Life can be so beautiful. Even when you're like single, you know, some people are like, oh, I need a boyfriend, or I need to be in this, and I need to be doing this by this age. It's like, you have to be present. He taught me how to be present. Like one time I was sitting there, he's like, Mommy, look. And I turned and I'm like, what? And it was a sunset. And the fact that he found so much beauty in it. And I sat there and I just looked at him, and I was more amazed by him than that.
Appreciating it.
And I was just like, God, you love me. You gave me this little beautiful guy who is showing me how to remember what life is about all over again.
And you're getting to see the world through the eyes of a loving, healthy child.
Yes.
Who is not suffering a lot of the abuses
yes.
that you
yes.
saw growing up.
Yes.
And I think that's a beautiful metaphor.
He's helping me sunset. Heal my inner child.
He's helping you. Aha.
Yeah. Yeah.
Podcast over, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for coming out. God bless you. Good night. Yeah. Listen, you are a wise, wise woman, but you're only this way because of the struggles
yeah.
that you've been able to overcome.
Yeah.
What is one thing you can tell somebody who's listening or watching right now, who's going through a struggle of their own?
Keep going. Don't stop in it. Because when you stop, that's when you like give up. And I say that because every day is a struggle, right? Like you're a single mom. You're trying to figure out how to make ends meet. You're trying to make sure you have enough time with your kid. You're trying to make sure that your business is prosperous. You want to be loved. You want the world to see you in a certain light, right? There's all these things, but you just got to keep going because no matter what, you're going to get through it. Like that's how life works. You get through everything. It's hard while you're going through it, but you get through it. It's just part of life. There's darkness, there's light. If you're going through darkness, keep going because the light is right there. It's just, and nothing ever changes in life like that. It's just the way it is. And that's what I need people to remember. You know, stop limiting yourself to what's happening to you right now. This is not your story. This is not the end of your story. Your story is still going.
Right.
So you just got to keep going. And you gotta believe in something bigger than yourself. So for me, I center myself in God. I pray, I meditate, I fast. I think it's so important when I can't tell and be real with anybody else, I'm real with Him. Sometimes the conversations you would be like, ooh, you're a preacher's daughter and you're talking to God like that. It's like, no, it's just God knows my heart and God knows what I need. So He's the only person that I can really tell what I'm feeling and Him give me the direction on where I need to go. And that's kind of how it is. That's how I protect my son as well. I pray for him every night. I pray over him. And I'm like, God, when I'm not here, you make sure, you know, that you're with him like how I'm with him now. And he is. I can tell. I can tell by the way that my son looks at things, the way that he talks to me.
So I know that spirituality and that connection with your higher power comes from the relationship you have with your grandmother.
Yes.
Based on what we discussed on
camera. My dad was a y'all don't judge me. My dad was a Catholic priest, and then he met my mother, and then he became a pastor. So it's not that he left God. He just changed his relationship with God so that he could marry my mother. And then that went to you know what. And he stopped believing in God after a while.
Wow.
I could tell by the way that he moved. You know, he would give a good sermon but live a different life. And to see that, you know, as a daughter of a pastor, it was very hard to sit in that pulpit. So I would always sit in the balcony or somewhere else with other people. And I would always say to myself, my God, it's so weird that people are so attached to the man of God versus the word of God. Mm-hmm. And to me, he's human. He's just like everybody else. And you guys don't even know what he does, you know, behind closed doors, not to put anything out there, but he's a man.
Right.
And we can't put power in a thing. We have to put power in the purpose.
Right.
And he's just a vessel. He's just delivering a message that you're supposed to get. And if it's for you, it's for you. If it's not, it's not. So that's kind of, because I get questioned all the time about my motive and why I'm doing this. And I can't worry about those things.
Right.
You know, because nobody's money is going into this but my own.
Right.
So.
Same here.
Yeah.
You know, why'd you choose to do Real Mentors? Why'd you choose to, you know, go on this mission to help others? And it's ever evolving. It's not in concrete or stone. But it is a choice that I finally decided to move into. But God's been showing me that this is my mission since I was 20 years old.
Yeah.
I was supposed to be speaking to people, helping people, be on stages, and give of myself.
Mm-hmm.
At 20 years old, I gave a speech at Bronx Community College. I was Honor Society president and asked to speak to the orientation group of the incoming students. And there were like 2,000 people. And I remember speaking to that audience and moving a lot of people to tears. And this is at 20.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a young man. I don't really know who I am or what I'm doing with my life. 6 or 7 years later, I'm at a train stop going to my job at the time because my hoopty had broken down. So I didn't have a car for a couple days. And this guy walks up to me at the train platform. And he goes, "Hey, I remember you from Bronx Community College. You gave a speech and I'll never forget it. And I saw you yesterday and I was like, no, that can't be the guy." And then the second day, the only 2 days I ever rode a train in to this job, same guy sees me, comes up to me, tells me the story. And he's like, "Man, I had to see what you were doing because I still remember that speech." And it hit me. I was like, dude, I'm not doing shit. In my head, I was like, I'm selling yellow pages in a cubicle for Verizon.
Right.
Because I didn't answer the call.
Mm.
I didn't answer the call. God put that purpose in my life at the age of 20. I wasn't ready to answer that call. This guy saw it in me just like those people at your church saw it in you, but you had to see it in yourself first. So this guy is now a resident at a hospital studying to be a doctor, and he's Indian, so he's an immigrant to this country.
Mm-hmm.
And that gave me so much disappointment and shame in myself to see that in the 7 years since this guy saw me on stage and still remembered me, I hadn't accomplished a damn thing. And this guy was on his way to becoming a doctor. I only say that to say that we can only step into our purpose when we're ready.
Yes, yes.
Since we're having to talk about spirituality. And it wasn't until, I've always believed in something. I've always believed in a higher power. I've always said thankful. I've always been grateful for the majority of my life. I've actually been an atheist at other points in my life. Mm-hmm. But looking back now, I realized the times when I didn't believe were the worst times of my life.
Mm.
Because nothing puts things in perspective like knowing you cannot control the outcome.
Yeah.
You can just control how you show up. You can control the energy that you put out, the way that you treat people and affect people, and don't expect anything in return. Just put it out there, and guess what? When you do those things and you step into your purpose, the universe, God, whatever you want to call it, rolls out the red carpet for you.
It does this.
And that has been the last 2 years of my life. Decision to get sober. Decision to finally get on my knees and pray.
Yeah.
On an almost daily basis. Because there's days when, you know, the alarm ring, I didn't slip in, I got to run. But I still take the time to thank God. Quite honestly, being candid, I went to the bathroom before this interview started. And I ask God to give me the strength to guide my words, to help me shine light on your message and the things that you're doing, because I am simply a vessel of something greater than myself. And it truly is real that giving is living. And I think you do that in your food. I think you do that in your conversation, in your interaction with people, because I feel it. What's next for Christina?
Well, I think right now I'm enjoying, I mean, listen, things have changed so much, but in such good ways. We're doing the hip hop health expo next month, and they want me to be on the panel. And I thought, okay. I remember one of my old bosses who became a very good friend who died of cancer. It broke my heart. Like, that's why I'm so quick to get checked and make sure. She died a couple months prior to me finding out. Mm. I was pregnant with Zion. Zion was in there with cancer. So he saved my life. And that's why I love him the way that I do, because he shined a light on something that I didn't even know was happening inside of me. And she used to tell me, my God, your communication is so bad. And I was like, I don't communicate bad. I'm a poet. I'm an artist. What are you saying? And she'd be like, girl, did you hear what you just said to that applicant? She was like, what? And I'll never forget what she said and how she said. And I had to laugh. And like, I went home and I was like offended, but I laughed about it. And I was like, she's so right. And it's like that moment where you have to be real with yourself and say, okay, God, this is not my strong suit. I need you to work on that for me. Because I know you have a purpose for me and you're not going to put me in this position in order to lead others. Because that's what, at the time, what I was doing, I was a general manager. You're not going to put me in a position to lead others and I can't communicate effectively. Or maybe to her, her perception is that I don't communicate. And that was a moment for me to say, I can communicate better. And she had a great, like, communication style. Like, everybody loved to be around her. There was something very authentic and pure about how she communicated. And I admired that about her. And she was younger than me. She was probably like 6 years younger than me, but there was something about her that was such an old soul. And every time we sat in a room, I always wanted to like talk to her. And I'd be like, so Erica, tell me this, tell me that. And it was just always good vibes. And I said to God, you know, whatever that is, I don't want to be Erica, but I want that, whatever that is. And I know that's God. I know that's you. I see it. And when you recognize God in someone else, that's when you make the connection. And I was like, and the reason why she felt comfortable telling me that was because she saw the God in me and she knew I was going to be able to receive it. So I was like, okay, God, that's how I want my life to work. I want to be able to communicate with those that I see the light in, those people who need the light, those people who, you know, need that in their life. And that's what I want. So it was a very scary thing to do, like to get in front of people and have to tell them exactly what's in their food and make it impressionable, right? But then when I started talking about food, it just happened. And I was like, oh my God, people are like, oh my God, I don't even know what that is, but I want it. And I'm like, how did I do that? Like, some days I would leave an event and be like, how did I do that? Or it'd be in the kitchen of the restaurant and I could hear smacking and I could hear people really enjoying what they're, and I'm like, I'd be in the kitchen. I'd be like, thank you, God. Thank you so much. Like, you know, it was that moment where I was like, okay. And it felt so good. And it may seem like such a simple job and such a, you know, because one of my friends like, you're a cook. You cook for other people, Chris. That's not glamorous. It's like the bottom. And me and that person aren't friends anymore, but not because I chose not to be a friend. It just dwindled. It was like God always does that with the relationships in my life. There's never a hard sever. It's just kind of like, you're not meant to be here anymore. Goodbye. Right. And it was that moment where I said, you know, my people will find me. Right. And the people who, you know, there's McDonald's, there's Wendy's, there's Burger King. They're all the same but different. And I'm that way when I cook. If someone is looking for someone who pours back into the community but also cooks good food and it's organic and it's locally sourced and there's, you know, it's the meats are halal, that's me. I'm not for everybody. You know, sometimes people try to change the menu. Do roast pork? I'm like, I don't cook pork. I don't even touch pork.
Doesn't line up with
Yeah. So, values. And people are like, but why? I'm like, it's just not what I do. Well, could you if I buy it? No. It's like, there's something for everybody. And I've learned to stand firm in it. And I've learned to not focus on the people and focus on the purpose. And that's the thing. And then remembering why I'm doing this. I'm doing this so that I can spend more time with my son. And I'm doing this so I can watch him grow. Because I don't remember my parents being there for me when I was young. I don't remember them playing with me. I don't remember having those moments where, I just don't remember them like that. I remember them going to work. I remember them fighting. I remember other things. I remember them taking us to Disney World, but never once like playing with us or interacting with us. And I said, I don't want that for Zion. I want him to remember, like, my mom was crazy. My mama was on the floor with me trying to do this and that. You know, so I want him to have those moments where when I'm not in this place, he feels the love and he can laugh about things and be like, my mom was crazy. My mom, if I know there's one person that loved me, it was my mom.
Right.
You know, and he can give that to someone else because love is a gift and it just keeps giving to, and when you spread it and you touch people with it, it just does something and it keeps going. And that's what I want. That's like what I want for him. So, yeah.
Your purpose is, you know, heart-driven.
Yeah.
It's love. It's your love of people,
yeah.
I think. It's your love of food and being able to mesh those two things. And you said something poignant, which is that, you know, you being in your purpose has allowed people to find you and the people that line up with your values.
Yeah.
And you don't compromise those. And when you don't compromise those, it filters out the noise and
absolutely.
The people that don't belong in your life. And that's not a knock on anybody. It's just, hey, we were meant to be in this for a season. Not forever.
Mm-hmm.
And how do people find you online?
So you can find us on our website at www.brunchatscience.com. You can also find us on Instagram at the @ Chef Chris, Christina. And Christina is spelled a little differently.
Yes, it is.
It's spelled CHRYSTINA. Or you could find us at Brunch at Zion's. And Brunch at Zion's is completely spelled out. So brunch, A-T, at Zion's. So just, you can find us there. You can reach out. We're on Google. You can look at our reviews. You can look at some really good food pics. You know, to me, it's all full circle. So if you need anything catered, if you need someone to just come in and do a nice little date for you and your loved one, I do those too. I love doing those. If you just want to have, you know, something, a cooking lesson, we do those too. You know, it's people's like, oh, you don't have that on your website. It's because it's one of those things that the company is forever evolving. I didn't think I was going to be teaching kids how to cook. I'm doing it. You know, it's like one of those things where your resume grows when you evolve in what you're doing. I was telling Flo that I, you know, in the future I would love to go somewhere overseas and like hillside and have like a little restaurant, but not for profit, kind of just so that my family has somewhere to come travel to and we have like vegetables and greens growing on the side, but something very beautiful. And I want to retire in that, you know, and educate, because I feel like there's a point in life where you're doing and then there's a point in your life where you start teaching. And I didn't think the teaching was going to come this way and so soon. You know, I thought I was going to be 70 and I'm going to be teaching somebody. And it's like, okay, God, whatever you're doing, I'm just going to go with it. And you tell me if I do it well, because Lord. But I love kids, and I wanted a lot of them. And that wasn't in my cards. You know, I had one, and he's amazing. So for me, having this class with these kids is like, it's almost like a dream come true. I know it's not, you know, for someone else, it might not be, oh, my God. Like,
who cares?
But you've cooked for celebrities. Yeah, I have. But there's nothing more gratifying when that light turns on in a child and you give them something that they can use. And then you see them a couple years later and they're like this master of whatever seed you planted. And you're like, whoosh. You know, like, that's some shit. Excuse my language.
No, but please. We love cursing around here.
But that's what you want to see. That's the impact you want to see. And when I see those moments, that's what makes me happy.
So perfect segue. This is the Real Mentors podcast. Who was the person you would attribute as one of the most impactful mentors you've had in your life? And if you had something short and sweet to say to that person, whether they were here or not, or still here or not, what would that thing be?
I want to say my grandma, but I think everybody who knows me has talked about my grandmother. But there was somebody who really fed things that my grandmother gave me. And it would be my home ec teacher, because she couldn't believe the things that I was doing in that little kitchen and the clothes that we were sewing and how we were making them. And she really put a fire under me. Like, anytime the football team's jersey ripped, she was like, can you fix this and make this look seamless? I'm like, yeah. So I'd be sitting there. She's like, I'm going to take you out of second period so you can finish this. And she, like, made me feel like I was important. And, I mean, we don't talk about teachers enough, but there's always that one teacher. And that was my teacher, like my home ec teacher. And it was two of them. You know, when I switched from junior high to high school, those teachers were huge for me. And my environmental science teacher, he really showed me the importance of like toxins and how to be mindful of what you're putting on your skin and your hair and how it affects the environment and how you grow. And those people, I didn't think that, I don't know why I love those people so much, but they just affected me. They always said something so impactful. I remember he said something to me. There's a little voice inside of you. You got to listen to that. He's like, sometimes it's going to tell you, don't forget the umbrella. Never not listen to that voice. That voice is important. And then I met my other teacher and she's like, that little voice in you is God. Don't forget to listen to the God in you. And it was like these people just showed up in my life that really helped me. Even though what was going on around me wasn't very nurturing or loving, God still placed people, strangers, who were able to teach me and love on me and show me that I was important. And for those people, I'm grateful, because your family's going to love you, right?
Right.
Your family, at the end of the day, whether they're good or bad, you know, the ones who do love you, love on you good. But when it's a stranger, right, someone who doesn't have, they don't need to love you,
right,
but they do, that's different. And that's kind of like, I think everybody needs that. And everybody needs that. And that's a mentor. That's a guide. And I always pay attention to those type of people. So those people are the ones that really help me in my journey.
Well, we've brought it full circle, as now you are probably going to be that to others.
I hope so.
And you're going to be a memory in their lives. And you're going to be that person that teaches them what whole healthy foods and cooking looks like. So thank you. For showing up today. Thank you for being so honest. Thank you for your warm heart. And everybody knows where to find Christina. Yeah. Stay tuned to the Real Mentors podcast. We'll post all of those links below. Mm-hmm. If you want to follow Christina, we'll have all that information for you as well. And just want to say thank you again.
My God, thank you.
Such an honor.
The honor is all mine. You have no idea. I heard your story. I was like, whoa. Yeah.
Thank you so much. Yeah. Take care, everybody. Thanks for showing up.